time now to go to Sunday school with the professor. Giants third base coach Ron Wotus with Marty Lawrence.
I didn't know you wanted to get involved with the discussion, Mr. Helper.
On your home of Giants baseball.
Good answer. Like the way you think.
KNBR 680, the sports leader.
All right, the professor is here. Did you ever watch Sam Kennison?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, he was, I saw his act many times on television, not live. Yeah. He was a nut, wasn't he?
Yes, he was. I love it. I'll tell you, I just think that movie is the best thing going. I really do. You know, back to school.
Great movie.
I love it. All right, the professor is here. It is September. September baseball, a little bit different. As I like to say, it's different in September baseball. Ken Mock always told me the pros take over in September. Well, you've been down this stretch run so many times. What does September baseball look like to you?
Yeah, I agree with that. Especially in this day and age with the sabermetrics and the matchups and, you know, you still look at those things. But I think when the game is on the line, it's, like a big playoff game or a World Series game or whatever you're involved with, you know, you're going to believe in certain people. You know, who do you want on the mound in a pressure situation? It's not always about the matchup and the numbers. It's about the person, like Felipe would always say. You know, you're going to trust the man in the situation. And who's your guy? You know, if you're going to lose this big game that could cost you the season, are you going to look at numbers to make a decision, or are you going to trust a certain individual because you know he's been there and he can handle it? So I think those decisions for us on the field enter into the game all season long, every day. But we do have a new way to look at the game with the sabermetrics and the numbers, et cetera, et cetera. And I think that's where the people on the field, the managers and the coaches, know the human element, know the people, and rely on that a little bit more. And I think it probably happens more in general in September with these big games going on.
Yeah, it must be different, though, because we're so in tune to doing everything by the book. You know, the analytics by the book, and then all of a sudden you say, you know, we're leaving them in there. It must be interesting.
Well, it is, I think. Obviously, there's different perspectives of people who are on the field and people maybe who are not have different views. And the beauty of baseball, right? Everybody's different. I mean, even on our coaching staff, we could have a difference of opinion who should be on the mound in a particular situation or who should be the pinch hitter. We've gone through that many times. Who do you like? You know, not everybody thinks the same. And we all value certain intangibles or numbers differently, and that's what makes a game great.
Yeah, great. Good answer on that one. Going down the stretch, I always thought, for some reason, I just remember Jeff Kent in September, that Jeff Kent was a guy who got big hits. So for some reason, I just remember him.
Well, you know, you're right. He's one of the best clutch hitters I've ever been around. And, you know, he did it against us, too, when he was in L.A., he had a knack for the RBI. We talked about a little bit about that in earlier shows, a knack for the RBI. Guy on third, he's going to get him in. Big at bat. He rose to the occasion. And he had that laser focus with men on base, the game on the line, big games, good hitter, obviously. Some people have a better knack for that than others, and he was one of those guys.
What do you think of his defense? Because, you know, I think he's a Hall of Famer. And I think the numbers are there as a second baseman. You look at all the home runs, and you just described him as a hitter. What about as a fielder? How do you evaluate Kent as a fielder?
Well, I probably appreciate him a lot more than other people just because I got to see him play every day. And what we talked about with his offense, the type of winning clutch player he was, really sticks with me. So, you know, you kind of look at some of the other areas, his defense, and maybe his faults aren't as glaring because that's such a big part of the game and the man, and you want him in those situations. But as far as his fielding, you know, he started off a little bit rough. Started as a third baseman with the Mets in third and second, back and forth. You know, but at the end of his career, and I shouldn't even say the end, you know, the middle to the end, he was a good fielder. Look, he had limited range.
Okay.
He'd kick a ball every now and again, but everybody did. But what he did, he made the routine play. without tremendous range, and he turned a very good double play, which is a good quality to have as a second baseman. He kept his nose in there. He never backed away from a double play. He wasn't trying to get out of the way of the runner. He turned a double play. So, yeah, you know, I don't remember ever saying we need to get him out of there because of his defensive inadequacies. So I think he was a solid major league second baseman with a plus double play.
Yeah, very good. Yeah. I agree with you. I think I looked it up at one point. I think he had over 1,200 double plays, whatever that number meant. It was a big number. It surprised me because, you know, you always think of him as a hitter. But
right.
Yeah, very good. I wonder how he would have, if it would have helped him to have all the shifts as a defender when he played. So maybe you'd have put him in a position where he would, you know what I mean? Where
No. No, hey, Jeff was a little cantankerous at first. He'll tell you that. He's not going to want to be told to play here or play there and go out on the grass. I think he'd have enough of that. I don't think he would buy into that so much because he has strong opinions. He reads the swings, and it would be an adjustment for him. Let's say that to Lisa. It would have been an adjustment for him to have to deal with all these shifts. There's no doubt in my mind.
Oh, very good. All right. Good one on Jeff Kent. Joe West was in the news last night, and anytime you mention Joe West, you know there's going to be a story. Yeah. And I hope Eddie Montague is listening on this one, but Joe West is umpiring home plate last night, and Austin Davis is pitching for the Phillies, a kid. And he goes to his back pocket, Davis does, and pulls out a card, which obviously you guys have now with all the analytics on there of how to pitch people and how to play people. And Joe West says, you can't do that. It's a foreign substance. A pitcher is not allowed to have any foreign substance on his person while he's pitching, other than if there's a rain going on, he could put the rosin bag in his back pocket.
Okay.
That's it.
That's it.
So he pulls out the piece of paper. Joe West confiscates it and takes it away. How about that?
Yeah, well, my initial reaction is that's Joe being Joe, right? As you said, he's going to be in the middle of it. The other initial reaction is, you know, it's not helping the pitcher throw the ball. It's not a foreign substance. So looking at the rule, maybe it needs to be rewritten. You know, you can't have a foreign substance. You're talking about a grip or you know, to throw a spitter or something like that, or a nail file, something that's going to help you manipulate the ball. A card on how to pitch guys is not going to do that. Now, the question is, should the rule be changed? Because the players are using their cards. I saw the highlights last night, Baez holding up his card at shortstop, showing everybody, just you know, get in the mix with this controversy. The catchers have it. They have wristbands now. You know, where their wristbands are, they'll peel it back on a reminder how to pitch a guy. But, you know, the part of it that maybe a rule should be written that they shouldn't have is we're trying to speed up the game, or the league's trying to speed up the game. They're limiting the amount of visits. And it is frustrating every time the pitching coach comes out in a game to go over a hitter that's been with the team or has been on the roster. It really does slow down the game. So will that card slow down the pitcher? You know, when a hitter comes up, looking at his card, reading his card, and now going to pitch. With mound visits being the way we communicate with the pitcher, I could see where there could be a problem with having the pitcher having his notes, because, you know, now he's going to sit there and study up on the hitter. Just put a notebook behind the mound, maybe. So I see where that could become a problem and probably an issue.
All right. Well, here's the rule. Allie looked up the rule for us, and I'll just tell you. The pitcher may not attach anything to either hand, any finger, either wrist. Example, a Band-Aid, tape, super glue, a bracelet, etc. The umpire shall determine if such attachment is indeed a foreign substance for the purpose of Rule 602C7, which is we're talking about. But in no case may the pitcher be allowed to pitch with such attachment to his hand, finger, or wrist. Now, Part 7 says, we got to go to law school for this.
Part well, I'm seven, glad you're here.
The pitcher shall not have on his person or in his possession any foreign substance.
Right.
So with that comment ahead of this, you couldn't ever, the intent of the rule is obviously what what this says and what you just explained, the attendant rule is not, you can't have a piece of paper in your pocket. It's something to help the pitcher.
Exactly. And our great friend, who's always on your show and listening, and hope he is, Eddie Montague, was a tremendous umpire. And the thing I loved about Eddie in the league, he was here for quite a while before he retired when I was in the league. And I talk to him quite frequently now when he's at the ballpark about different rules over the years, is you have to use common sense. You know, he would enforce the rules, but he would do it with common sense. So, and I think that's a great approach. You know, by no way was that paper helping him throw the baseball or doctor the baseball, which I believe the intent, that is the intent of the rule. Now, I do believe maybe it should be changed so we're not putting iPads on the field so we can read what to do to be ready to perform against the opposing team.
Yeah, come on, you can have the Apple Watch. Carmen, don't you have an Apple Watch? I think, don't you have one of those watches that has information on it?
Yes. Yes, I have an Apple Watch.
Well, yeah, they were used, Carmen,
yeah.
Right? I mean,
yeah.
One team got in trouble for the Apple Watch in real time, getting the scouting information and relaying information on the Apple Watches from upstairs to the base coaches. Yeah. So, yeah, that was an issue. You can't wear those on the field. We have the iPads, but those are under lock and key, right? Yeah. They get in the vault and they put the information on. But, it's an issue as far as cheating.
Yeah, and they put the iPads with the humidor.
Yeah, that's where they keep them, yeah, and it's good. I think it's good for the electronics to have a little humidity in there, too.
Very good. Hey, Andrew McCutchen is a Yankee, and the first thing they did said, look, you got to shave your beard.
Yeah.
And he didn't have that big a beard, but, you know, they got to shave the beard. So this is the Yankee way. Brian Sabian's an old Yankee. You guys have never had that rule, have
right.
you, here?
No, we haven't. I've heard Saves once in a while ask somebody, when are you going to get your hair cut, myself included? I don't remember the rule. We may have for a brief period of time. It wasn't to the extent of the Yankees, but I think the full beard may have been. I could be mistaken. Something that we tried to stay away from. And the mutton chops, you know, the long sideburns, I think at first, and, you know, the Sabes would know. But I think there was maybe frowned upon and with that. But no, it's definitely not now. And it's really unique to see it still going on in this day and age. But that's part of the Yankee lore and their tradition. And everybody seems to buy in.
Yeah, well, it was interesting, McCutchen, because he said his little boy wouldn't recognize him. So he held the little kid in his arms while he shaved.
Did he?
Yeah. So, he's so McCutchen. I'll miss McCutchen. What do you think of him?
Yeah, well, you know, for that reason alone right there, that's a human interest story that I think fans love to hear, and it's very unique. And he's right? A ball player, he's gone half the time. He's not around his kid. That's the big sacrifice these guys make to play this great game. They're away so much from their family. A nice little bit by him. I'll miss him. You know, obviously, it's hard to go through this last month without one of our better players on the field, when you're trying to win games. But right now, it's in the best interest of the organization moving forward, and it gives these young guys an opportunity. But I'll miss Kutch. You know, he was able to steal a base. He's able to hit with power. He was able to do everything that you want in a ball player. So, it was great to have him here for the period we did.
I liked him. I don't think anything bothered him. You know, it looked like he rolled with whatever went down. If he struck out or if he didn't get a hit, he just was the same guy all the time.
He was, and he was very coachable, too, which I liked. Talking to him about different things. No ego, very approachable, would listen. And then he'd go out and do it. I know Augie talked to him quite a lot about stealing bases and things to do and this and that. And there was never any attitude or was always engaged. And he'd try to go out and put it into play. And he tried to help his teammates as well, you know, the young guys, and shared information. So, we'll miss him.
Yeah, good guy. This week, the professor is here. You had a heck of a defensive play this week. I know, first of all, you lost Duggar. That's a blow to the team. Duggar had turned the corner a little bit. I love Bumgarner's comment, and I said this on the show yesterday. I don't care if the kid ever gets a hit. I want him in center field.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's a great comment. But you lost Duggar. Maybe you can comment on him and the progress he had made prior to the injury this week.
Yeah, well, you're exactly right. He was hitting his stride. He's making big strides with his swing. He really was with Rick Shue and Alonzo Powell. They've done a good job with him, and he's got the right makeup, the right approach, you know, quiet, wants to get it done, very coachable. So, you know, he was a nice player to have, and we're going to miss his speed. You know, him and Kutch are both our leading base stealers, or two of the best at stealing a base that we had. So we're going to miss that asset of it. As Bum mentioned, his ability to cover the field in the outfield is a plus. So, it's going to hurt. It's going to hurt. And you hate to see that when a player is starting to make those strides and perform, because he was locked in for the 3 or 4 days before he got hurt. So a tough break for him, but he'll be back. So we still have him under control.
Yeah, remember My Cousin Vinny? Remember the movie?
Oh, yeah, I love that movie.
Remember,
that's
so here's Joe Pesci, you know, he does the cross-examination of the woman who can't see or something like that, and the co-defendant, who's got the public defender who can't say anything. When Joe Pesci is done, the kid looks at Fred Gwynne, who's the judge, and says, "I want him as my lawyer."
That's right.
And that's the way, I swear, Bumgarner made me think of the movie. Said, "I want him in center field. I don't care what else happens."
Yeah, I know. He made those comments in spring training. I mean, I was around Bum, and Bum was on the mound, and the ball was hit, and he ran it down, and he had a big smile on his face. You know, he wanted him right then and there. Of course, he went to AAA, but yeah, exactly.
It was good. And the other thing about this, I like these parts of baseball. Fly balls hit the center field in that game, and Bum had he worked out of a lot of trouble in his last game that he pitched against Arizona. And the fly ball center field, it would have been the third out of the inning. Before the ball came down, as the ball was hit up in the air, Bumgarner walked off the mound.
Yeah.
He was at the foul line by the time Duggar caught it, because he knew the ball was going to be caught.
Right.
I like that.
You like that. You like that show of confidence.
I like that.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it was good. All right. Well, that play was a great defensive play in the game, where he cuts the ball off in the gap, throws to Crawford, and I know I love when you describe this stuff. And Crawford has a lot of time to throw to the plate. Now, I see why they sent him, because it was that stage of the game, a close game and all that kind of stuff, and you can comment on that. But he threw the ball very high.
Yeah.
And Hundley says his vertical leap is usually about 6 or 10 inches. He went about 40. But then describe the play, because he came down and made a heck of a play to make the tag on Ahmed.
Yeah, you know, Ahmed running from first base. He actually went on his own. Tony Perez Chica, the third base coach, was holding him up. I played with Tony. He was a San Francisco Giant, and with the Phoenix Giants, we were teammates together back in the late 80s. But he was holding him up. And because he was going to be out when Craw got the relay from Duggar, which was a perfect throw, you know, Craw actually was surprised that he was going by the timing of the play. He took a little longer to get rid of the ball, but he did what we like to see the infielders do, and that is, if you're close enough to make the throw all the way in the air, okay, if you're close enough to the infield, where you're not going to short hop it or don't have a difficult time carrying the ball all the way in the air, throw it all the way in the air, because you're not taking a risk of a bad one hop or your in-between hop. He did. It was a little bit high, and it could have cost him, but a strong throw, and he was out easily. Now, if Craw was another 20 yards out in the outfield, if that ball was further in the gap, he probably would have one-hopped him, which is the most common. If you're in between and don't know whether to throw all the way in the air or one hop, do the one long hop. Throw it so it gives one long hop to the catcher. But when you're close enough, I've always believed I'm going to throw it all the way in there. It gets there quicker, and there's no risk of the catcher mishandling it or me misjudging my throw, and it's an in-between hop, and the guy's out, and then now the in-between hop, it kicks away, and he's safe.
Boy, but Hundley came down with a swipe tag, and it was a close play.
Yeah, it became close, yeah.
Heck of a tag.
Yeah, he did a good job on that, because it's not easy to jump up like that and come down and make a play. It does take time.
So what does a third base coach think at that point? I mean, you know, there's the pitcher, I guess, I forgot who was coming up next, but two out, and you are holding him up, and it looks like he was going to be out by a lot.
Right.
And then the kid goes, you know, to make the play.
Well, if he goes and he's safe, the third base coach says, great job, good read, nice going. All right, everybody's happy. If he's thrown out, the coach is pissed. I'll just leave it at that. You're not happy about it.
All right, yeah. All right, very good, very good. And I love the throw, and I love the explanation of the throw, and I was thinking of the plays that are in deep right field. Where you make, now the shortstop, Crawford is used to making that throw. But how about the play in right field where the first baseman's got to get the ball and turn and throw to the plate?
Right.
And you've been around a lot of first basemen. I was just thinking maybe you could describe that play and how the first baseman makes the play and who maybe some stand out for you.
Well, in our ballpark, the right field line is very, very short. Yeah. You know, typically if it was deeper down there, it's, the play comes into effect a little bit more. But in our park, the ball down the right field line or any park, when the ball is hit down the right field line, the first baseman is the trail relay man. So second baseman goes out, first baseman is the trail guy. But in our park, when there's a shot, let's say the second baseman's way up the middle, sometimes Belt becomes the lead relay man because of the short porch out there and the positioning of panic. Belt can get in position earlier to make that throw. So it all depends on your arms, right? If you have a guy that has a strong arm, which Belt does, it's not an issue. But to your other point, you have to weigh in their ability to be accurate. They never make that throw. Are they going to be more consistent? So I've always preferred, the middle infielders to be the lead guy. So typically Joe Panic, if he can be the lead guy, he will get out there. But on a broken play, because he's playing maybe in a shift or he's right near second, the second base bag, and Belt's there quicker, he may be the lead guy, and then Panic would trail him. But all things being equal, we want the guys that make that throw routinely to be the lead relay man.
How's Belt? I guess Belt's got a great arm.
He has a great arm, and he's done great. He's had some throws over the year that were very, very good. You see him throw the ball to second base. He's able to throw it to third. So it's not a bad option for us. He has a lot of arm strength. And, along that line, we've actually switched relays, and most teams do. If you have a second baseman, sometimes it doesn't have the arm strength as the shortstop. So when the ball's in the right center field gap, typically to second baseman, be the lead guy, shortstop trail him. But we've actually flipped it with certain players over the years where the shortstop would go out, and we want to utilize his arm opposed to the second baseman. Of course, you got to hit the first guy too, right? The outfielder could overthrow the first guy and hit the second guy, but we're trying to hit the first relay man from the outfield.
Boy, great, great. But this is, the professor is hot this morning. Very good. Very good.
Well, let's hope we have a few more of those plays throwing people out at the plate.
Yeah,
we like
very,
those.
No, I love the analysis of it, because it's something we watch all the time. How was JT Snow on that? I mean, I always felt he was a shortstop playing first base.
Yeah.
Was he one of the best you've ever
seen? No, he was great. He was obviously one of the best fielders I've ever been around. He could throw the ball. He could throw the ball home on a relay. He did everything that you wanted a first baseman to do.
How about the big cat?
The big cat. Now, the big cat was, I don't remember him involved in too many relays, so... it doesn't happen very often where he actually has to throw the ball. But with a name like the Big Cat, I bet you if he had a relay to make, he could make the throw.
Andres Galarraga.
Yeah.
Boy, how about him as a hitter?
Wow. Wow. I remember he was the first guy to hit it up in the soup kitchen for me up in Arizona. They have that restaurant in left field up above. I call it the soup kitchen because, here comes a baseball in your soup. But it's just a regular restaurant. And he used to blast them up there in the first row where the tables were. Of course, you see guys do that now in batting practice, which makes you wonder about the baseball. But, it happens a little more routinely now.
Boy, yeah, he was a hitter.
Yeah, he was.
He was a hitter.
Great presence, great threat in that lineup, presence in the lineup. Could hit for power, and get a big hit when you needed it.
I was thinking about this. Ron Wode is with us, the third base coach of the San Francisco Giants, and, of course, the professor. As we go through another year of this. We've been doing this for a while now.
Yeah, how many years is it, Marty? Do we know?
We'll have to have the staff look that one up.
Okay.
But I think probably at least 5 years, probably something like that.
Yeah, I remember we started off, it was every Sunday. I was calling in from the road, of course, not the first few times, and then it grew into this, where I was calling in every Sunday from the road as well. And so it's been going on a while. Well, 2014, I know, which is 18. I can remember being in Kansas City and calling you often, so on a Sunday. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's 5 or 6 years. You have a lot of listeners, you know that. When you come to the ballpark, you are the professor.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate it. I appreciate it. You know, I've had great conversations with a lot of fans over the years that listen, and they love you, Marty. They love your show, and rightfully so, since we're on it. I know you're going to be inducted into the Jewish Hall of Fame of Northern California this September 16th on Sunday, along with some other well-deserving people here in Northern California. I'm looking forward to that event.
Yeah, you're one of my presenters, and I get two presenters, and I'm thrilled that you could do it. I really am, and it's going to be exciting. Thank you for staying back, because I know you got a game that day. And it better not be 16 innings. So
right. That's right.
Get people moving.
That's right.
And then you'll stay and then go to San Diego the next day. So I appreciate it. Michael Gaines, who I've known since I'm 14 years old and practiced law with him, and a great Giants fan. In Miami Beach, he was the only Giants fan. No, the two of them, Alan Goldfarb and Michael Gaines. They were the only two Giants fans in Miami Beach.
Really?
That was it.
Who did it? Not the Yankees, Baltimore?
I kind of like the Orioles, but they were Yankee fans because it was all transplanted Northeast guys. So we had the Sherman brothers who loved Mantle, and every time Mantle did something, they'd run out of their house and scream about it. You know, that was how we grew up.
Right. Well, you have, Baltimore trained in Miami, and, of course, the Yankees. You know, a lot of New Englanders go down to Florida and relocate or spend a lot of time there. So I would imagine those were the two most popular teams. But, yeah, I'm looking forward to this event. I'm happy that I could make it, and it's going to be a great event. A lot of great names there. And Chris Berman, I see, who's going to be inducted as well, who's a great Giant fan and friend as well. So I'm looking forward to it. Thanks for asking me.
What an honor. It's a big deal to do it. It made me think of Joey Bart this week. All right. And people, of course, with Posey having the surgery, Joey Bart all of a sudden is on the fast track. He's gone from Salem. His next stop will be here on Monday. But college players jumping to the majors. Bob Horner did it.
Yeah.
That you don't see too many of them, but I guess it could happen.
Sure.
And not for Bart necessarily, but you know, you find a college pitcher or a player. What do you think about that?
Yeah. No, I think I think the evaluation of the player by the organization goes a long way, and I think. You know, most of the time when you have a number one pick, you want to indoctrinate him into the way of professional baseball and let him get his feet on the ground. And, you know, I've always believed in development when you move a player and when you bring a player into the major leagues, you want him to be part of the solution, not part of the problem. You know, you don't want to bring a guy up too soon to where he struggles and now he has to be sent back. Now, it happens after they played a while, but to rush him before his time, you know, right out of college into the major leagues, if you're trying to win, I think you're at risk for that. Now, it can happen. A team that maybe is trying to develop, they're not in the chase, and they think this guy is going to be their future next year. Sure, why not? They think he can handle it. So there's a lot of evaluation that goes into that by the organization, the people that know him, and, you know, they see him in rookie ball for a little bit. They get to learn the man and his abilities. And, you know, in Joey's situation, being a catcher, you know, I think we did the prudent thing with Buster Posey. And it was perfect and worked out perfect. Was when he got here, he was part of the solution. He really helped us win games. And I would imagine they're going to try to do the same thing with Joey Bart. But being a catcher, the point was that there's more than just your hitting. It's calling a game, learning how to handle the pitchers. And I'm sure it's a lot different here than it is at the college level.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Horner comes to mind for me. I remember Bob Horner of the Braves.
Yeah.
Went right from Arizona State right to the big leagues, and was a tremendous hitter and had a good career.
So yes, he did.
I remember him for sure.
Yeah.
What about, you guys did this a little bit with Connor Gillespie. How about that?
Yeah.
Remember in September, his contract said he's got to be up in September, and that didn't go well for him.
Right, and there's a classic of example of it probably went the other way. He was here before his time, and it wasn't that he didn't have the hitting ability, but I just don't think, the person and everything that transpired being a teammate didn't bode well for him, you know? And so that's another example of something not working out, and he wasn't part of the solution, but had a more difficult time fitting in here at the major leagues and coming right out of college. It's a big jump, yeah. You know. He was a confident, cocky kid, and may have said a couple of the wrong things here and there. And of course, the teammates up here that have been around, they're not going to stand for that. So I think it worked in the opposite effect for him.
All right. We'll take a break. Good talking with the professor this morning. The Willie Mack Award is coming up. And you voted on it so many times. I want to get your thought on the criteria, how you look at it. And then also the most dramatic, important, and colorful and athletic double plays that could be turned. And then Allie and Carmen will have a question for you as well. All right, more coming up with the professor right after this. All right, nice to have you back with us, a professor here. It's our Sunday morning. Always a pleasure to do that. Well, the Willie Mack Award is coming up, of course, at the end of the month, and we've talked about it on the show a lot and our own view of who should get it, who shouldn't get it, and we kick around a lot of names. You vote on it. What does it mean to you? What do you look for?
Well, you know, the criteria is written out somewhere, which I don't recall the details of. But, you know, I think a couple of things are most important. A player that approaches the game the right way. I think a player that performs doesn't have to be the best performer, but he has to be a contributor on the team because Willie Mack was such a great player. And someone who has, a great teammate, whether it doesn't have to be the leadership qualities, but a good teammate, someone that is there to make people around him better, you know, and his performance, the way he interacts, how he cares about the team and how he approaches a game. So those are the things that come to mind for me, the winners of the Willie Mack Awards. You know, the guys with the grit and go out and play the game hard are very important qualities.
So it's more like the better baseball player and also the guy in the clubhouse who shows that's the way to do it.
Yeah, he cares, and he's, you're not going to look at the guy and say, oh, he's taking a day off today, or he really don't care. He's gonna be griping about this and that. He's, consummate professional, and he's going to go out and do his job and make people around him better.
Very good. Okay. Aramis Garcia was going to be with us this morning, but he's got a lot going on in his life, and you commented about that, and I appreciate your comments about how he approaches things and how we would love to have him, but maybe it's not the right time.
Yeah, you know what? He just got here, and the job, a lot, there can be a lot of distractions as a young player. I know, myself, when I came up as a player, more so when I came up as a coach. You know, as a coach, I was used to having the field anytime I wanted to do early work and to get things done on the field. Then I got to the big leagues, and I wanted to grab an infielder to go out, and he had an appearance here. He was on the radio here. He was doing an interview, and it started to affect the work. So I think it's refreshing to see a guy that, he probably would love to come on, but he's probably putting the day in his work first. And we have a game here at 1 o'clock, and that's probably the way he's thinking. And I think that's the right approach. You know, you have to go out there and perform and do your job before you can do all these other things that sometimes take us away from our job to a certain degree. And as he gets his feet on the ground, he'll be able to manage everything and work things. I don't know if that's the case, but I think it very well could be.
Yeah. Well, tell him it's okay with me.
Okay, I will do.
Carmen Alley, question for Woe this morning. Carmen, you want to start with one for Woe?
Yeah, sure. I know Chris Shaw's up here. We only got to really see him in one game, but how's he looking to you?
He looks good. Well, you know, it's great to have these young guys. It's great to have a player here that has some strength and power potential, because, you know, everybody's hitting the ball out of the ballpark these days. And, you know, it's nice to have that guy. You know, he's another guy trying to get his feet on the ground. I'm sure he's, you know, a little bit bright-eyed right now with all this. He seems on the outside very calm, cool, and collective. But we know how it can be getting to the major leagues, and he's got a nice way about him. I think that he's grounded, and he was out working early yesterday with Bam Bam on his outfield work. So I think he's going to be fine.
New England guy, too.
Yeah, Boston College. Yeah, we play that up a little bit, me being from Connecticut.
Yeah, and, really?
Yeah, I saw he had his family here as well, which is great. You know, Marty, I love when these guys get to the big leagues and you get their families here, like Garcia, and hitting the home run, and they show his family. It's a moment that all of them will never forget, and it brings a smile to your face to see these young guys get their opportunity.
Yeah, Giants do it well. They bring the families out.
They do.
Yeah, very nice. It's sort of quietly, but it sort of has come out recently. But
no kidding. Well,
yeah.
The Pirates never did that for me. I was just down the road in Connecticut. Jeez.
Didn't they fly your family out?
No.
The whole crowd?
No. Not for me, anyway. I don't know, maybe somebody that was really good they did, but they didn't. They probably didn't do that back then.
They didn't realize what they had at that.
Yeah, right, exactly.
They didn't realize it. All right, Allie, question for Will?
Yeah, just kind of jumping off that, I was thinking about the rookies too, especially Friday night's game with, you know, Suarez pitching to Garcia, and you had Sean Slater in the outfield, and you're starting to see these younger guys come up, and it's kind of the transitional phase that we're seeing. But it's also the time of September call-ups, so just what's the vibe in the clubhouse like when you start having these rookies coming up and trying to make their mark, but also, I'm assuming, keep their head down, but start meshing with the rest of the team?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's hard to speak for the players. I think at this time of year when it happens, it's a little more difficult for us because, you know, we lost one of our better players, and, you know, we want to go to the playoffs. We've worked since spring training, and it's a little bit of a changing of personnel here, trying to do the prudent thing and give these guys an opportunity to be a better team in the future. So I think it's a little bit different in that regard. With those two young guys in the lineup, though, you know, Garcia and Shaw drove in the first run, and then Garcia hit the home run. At that point, we were going to win that game 2-0. And you know, with Suarez on the mound, like you said, and the two rookies were the reason why we were going to win the game, the call-ups. And we went on, the belt got the big hit, and we kind of put the game away. But that did stand out to me, that they'd contribute right away. And that's exciting. That's exciting to see.
It was just exciting to see, I think, that. And then Suarez, he went 7 scoreless that night. So it was such a rookie game. And then, of course, Belt coming in and, you know, really putting it away. But it was just such a big rookie game.
Yeah, and I'm sure a lot of people felt the same way, Allie, getting to see the young guys and are excited to see them here and see them contributing like that right away. So it was a good moment for them and for us.
Boy, nice. Good energy. You know, who knows how it'll all turn out, but when it happens and that young energy happens, it's pretty good.
Yeah, you're right, and that's the deal. I mean, you can't do it one day. You can't do it for a week. And in this game, the game will find you if you're not able to do it day in and day out, and it's a learning and growing experience for a young guy, and we'll see how they handle it the rest of the way.
All right, one last thing for you for Ron Motis. Aaron Boone, you know, you don't see many managers getting thrown out, and antics.
Right.
I like this guy's antics. Eddie Montague talked about Aaron Boone, that he had some moments with him as well. So he's a manager of the Yankees. The umpire, I forget who it is, calls a low strike. And Boone blows up. It's been going on the whole game. He comes out, starts screaming at the umpire. Then he gets behind home plate like a catcher.
Yeah.
Did you see it?
Yeah, I did see it.
I love it. Come on, this is good. I like that. This is good. We don't see the manager. So I'm going to ask you this. Maybe the best display of a manager yelling and screaming and doing something that you ever saw, or something you saw.
Well, you know, it's hard to say. I mean, obviously the guys that come to mind was Lou Piniella, right? Number one, throwing the bases, kicking his hat. I think Lou probably is at the top of the list. Now, Earl Weaver and Billy Martin have had their moments with getting thrown out with the umpires. And you hear some old videotapes of Earl Weaver yelling at the umpires. The thing they say are very comical. But just sheer display, probably Lou Piniella, you know, and he worked here for a little bit. You get to know Lou and, kicking his hat across the field and things he used to do was pretty entertaining. And you don't see it a lot today, but Aaron Boone's from a baseball family, and I guess he's been very reserved this year. So he knew when he was going to do it, what he wanted to do probably, and let him have it. And it does bring a little color to the game, as you said, with the video replay. That part of the game, the gamesmanship in the game, the managers getting upset, it's gone by the wayside. And I think a lot of people are like yourself. They miss that part of the game.
Absolutely. I think in that replay thing, the manager should be able to come out. He should be able to look at the camera and yell and scream at New York. Yell and scream and take your hat off. Do the whole thing. Why not?
Well, you may just give somebody an idea. It probably could happen.
Why not? All right. Well, great to have you with us, obviously. Have a good road trip. I know you tweeted out that getting ready to go on a long road trip, Colorado, which is always a challenge.
Right.
And Milwaukee, a place where Posey loved to hit. There's always something going on there. But you're playing two teams that are very, very much in it.
Yes, they are, and I'm looking forward to it. You know, it's nice to play meaningful games, and two teams are in it, so we want to go in there and take care of business and win some ball games.
All right, well, thanks so much.
Enjoyed it. Thanks, guys.
All right, that is Ron Wotus, the third base coach of the Giants. More coming up on the Sports Leader.